Good morning, church. Oh, yes. Just so you know, we're having some technical difficulties this morning, and we are not live streaming. So you guys can act as rowdy as you want. Nobody at home will know. We're trying to hopefully be able to record and upload it at a later time, but we were unable to get things going live this morning. So it's just going to be what it is. It's one of those things you just don't ever know what difficulties and complications you're going to face some days. It is a part of our world now that that technology plays such a large role in our lives, from the computers in our phones and in our cars to the ones we use to share our worship time together with our brothers and sisters who are at home. So there are inevitably going to be some of those difficulties. And things, it seems to me, have really started changing in the last few months regarding the workplace. Many people who work in service industries or in hospitality industries have struggled just to get by. Millions of people are at this time currently out of work, unemployed, because of the shutdown of some business who were unable to make it through the last few months. In addition to that, you have big changes that have been going on in other companies that have been able to work through this time. They've discovered that their employees can, in fact, work from home. I know some of you have been able to work from home where previously that has been prevented. But as it turns out, a lot of those meetings that just had to be in person didn't have to be in person. They can be carried out just as fine by video conferencing or messaging, and things are still getting done, sometimes even more efficiently. But virtually every industry has felt some sort of financial strain. There are exceptions, but really, just across the board, most industries have really struggled. Some have responded with long-term medical leave. Others have gone to layoffs and to cutbacks and trimming the fat, so to speak. I heard about one company that went so far as to hire a new CEO to make their company more efficient. And this new boss was determined to get rid of all the company slackers. So in the middle of his first day, he decided he was going to take a tour of the facilities. And the CEO noticed this guy who was just kind of leaning against the wall. The room is full of workers, and he thought, now is the perfect time to show everybody that no longer is going to be tolerated and that he means business. So the CEO walks up to this guy and says, how much money do you make a week? The young guy kind of looks at him shocked, and he says, I make about $300 a week. Why? CEO reaches into his pocket, pulls out a wad of bills, folds out $300, shoves it at the young man, and says, here's a week pay. Now get out and don't ever come back. He's feeling pretty good about his first firing. CEO looks around the room and said, anyone know what that slacker even did around here? And one of the employees spoke up with kind of an uncontrollable grin, yelled out, yeah, he was a sandwich delivery guy. So negotiating a new workplace can be tricky for anyone. But thinking about it this morning, for us, what? Negotiating a workplace can be difficult from a Christian perspective as well. Some Christians will be completely dismissive of work. It's just not that big a deal. For them, it's just something you got to do to get by. You just go to work and get it done, but it is completely unrelated to their spiritual life. There can be no true joy in it because it's completely separated from God. God and work reside in different compartments, and never the twain shall meet. Therefore, work is unimportant. Other Christians are completely consumed by work. For them, time with God and spiritual endeavors or spiritual matters is just something you can do when you have time off. Work and its financial rewards drive every facet of life, and everything revolves around it. For them, work is therefore all important. It's the most important thing. And we realize these are two extremes, right? These are the opposite ends of the spectrum. They represent two extremes. But it's really easy for us, no matter where we fall in the middle, to find ourselves sliding towards one end or the other. So how are we as Christians in the midst of a pandemic supposed to relate to our work? How are we supposed to make a living? In Acts 16, the Apostle Paul and Silas, they are headed out on what will be Paul's second missionary journey. He and Barnabas parted ways at the end of chapter 15. He's now traveling with Silas. And at the very beginning of chapter 16, they also pick up a young Timothy. And they encounter some people on this part of the journey that highlight both the blessings and the dangers that can be associated with work. And so on this particular portion of the journey, it begins with a, we'll call it a divine course correction for Paul and Silas. Beginning here in Acts 16, verses 9 through 10. During the night, Paul had a vision of a man of Macedonia standing and begging him, "Come out over to Macedonia and help us." After Paul had seen the vision, we got ready at once to leave for Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. So to be clear, Macedonia was never in Paul's plans. Doesn't appear so. They had their sights set, and they were planning on traveling into the Roman province of Bithynia. But God had prevented that. It was like God just put up a roadblock right there. And so it left them just hanging out to dry. They had this uncertain destination. And those times of uncertainty for us can be some of the most difficult. When we no longer know where we're going, how we're going to get there, or what we're going to do. They can be the hardest. But they also open us up to the possibilities that God is laying out before us. I'll be honest, when everything is going according to my plan, I am not very open to new ideas. If you had told me in February, "Hey, let's really focus on live streaming and get everybody to meet in the gym," I would have said, "That is a terrible plan." But I'll tell you, by June, it sounded like a pretty good plan to me. Right? New circumstances become a lot more appealing, and changes become a lot more appealing when our plans aren't working out. You know, generally we're of the opinion, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So as frustrating as it is to have our plans fall apart, sometimes that is exactly what we need in order for us to stop and listen to God. Brothers and sisters, we don't know what the next week holds for Coffee County. We are now have a COVID case count that is very, very comparable to Nashville's, because they have gone down slightly and we have come up sharply. We now have about the same density of COVID cases. So we don't know. In a month, we may not be able to meet together, or in 2 weeks, we may not be able to meet together. Unless things change and courses change, you know, we may have to make some changes. We just don't know what the future holds. But to Paul's credit, in this case, rather than beating on a door, and this is to our elders' credit as well, rather than beating on a door that God is just not going to open, what Paul does is he switches gears and he immediately jumps into God's plans. He immediately changes to head on to Macedonia. And we believe, of course, this is where we believe Luke had joined the journey, because he starts using the plural, the we, first person plural. And he talks about how we traveled here and we did this. And so Luke says, yeah, Paul had this vision, so we headed to Macedonia. Paul heeds the words of the Macedonian man in his vision and makes a quick course adjustment. And this is what happens when they get there. On the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. we sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. One of those listening was a woman from the city of Thyatira named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. She was a worshiper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. When she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. "If you consider me a believer in the Lord," she said, "come and stay at my house." And she persuaded us. It's interesting to me. I'd never thought about this before, but as I was reading this, Paul has a vision of a Macedonian man pleading for him to come. And when the first group he encounters when he arrives is a bunch of women. I mean, that is interesting that the call was from a man. The answer was by a woman. But it's not what's important. What is important is that those little things did not deter the missionaries in the least. Rather, they followed this new pattern and taught whoever was willing to listen without regard of sex or status or ethnic background or financial stability. They're just open to teaching whomever, wherever, however. And here's Lydia and her group of ladies worshiping by the river on a Sabbath. And that speaks volumes about Lydia. It probably says a lot about these other women as well. We just don't know their stories. What we do know is a little about hers. And this speaks volume about her. Because the Romans did not have a five-day work week. They did not have a six-day work week. They worked every day. Because you have to work every day to make the most money. In the words of the Dowager Countess, what is a weekend? To Lydia at least, by the way, there was something more important to her than just work. There was something that was bigger to her than making more money on another day of the week. For her, it was time with God and the community of His people that was worth not working. Some have pointed out that Lydia must have been really wealthy, right? Lydia must have been incredibly wealthy because she's she is afforded a luxury like this. She's not working on this particular day, and she's seller of purple goods, which were very costly. Thyatira, by the way, was known as that was their kind of claim to fame, was that they made great purple goods. It's even mentioned in Homer's Odyssey that Thyatira was the place to go for purple goods. And so people will say, well, therefore, Lydia must be really, really wealthy because she's selling expensive goods. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, we all know people who have worked selling, luxury cars. Did not mean that they were luxury car owners, right? We've known people who could work in a jewelry store. It does not mean they could afford to buy all the jewelry in the store. Lydia, all we know was that she was a merchant and that she could afford her own house, which would have made her probably better off than most of her social companions. Not many women in that time could have done that. It would have made her financially stable, but not above the necessity of labor, because she was still out working and selling. So Lydia was well off enough, but it would be a stretch to call her wealthy. So taking all of this together, what we get is a picture of a woman who worked diligently and took pride in it without allowing it become the most important thing in her life. Work was something that you do, and it is important, but it's not the most important thing. And how difficult a balance that is to strike. And in fact, it is highlighted by the next leg of Paul and Silas' journey, because after leaving Lydia's hospitality, they journey on to Philippi, and they are met there by a female slave who was possessed by an evil spirit. And this evil spirit allowed her to predict the future and made her owners a lot of money as a fortune teller. And this is what that encounter with her looked like. Said she followed Paul and the rest of us around shouting, "These men are serving the Most High God, or servants of the Most High God, who are telling you the way of salvation or the way to be saved." She kept this up for many days. Finally, Paul became so annoyed that he turned around and said to the Spirit, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her." And at that moment, the Spirit left her. When her owners realized their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. This little passage, so many questions. How does this Spirit know the future? I mean, has anybody thought about that? How does the Spirit know the future? I mean, why would an evil spirit follow around Paul and Silas and say, tell everybody they're teaching the way of salvation? Why would an evil spirit do that? Why didn't Paul cast out the Spirit first thing? And what was so annoying about this girl shouting out the truth? I don't know. I don't know the answers to any of those questions. And we're not going to find those out today. But one thing we can be certain of is that to the owners of this girl, she was nothing more than a means to a profit. And once that was taken away, she became worthless to them. It is so easy. It was so easy for them, and it is really easy for us because we are in a consumer-driven society to view people as a means to a financial or physical end. When money and work consume us, that is what leads us to objectify others. Okay? People no longer are human beings that deserve our kindness and respect. They become dispensers of goods and services like a living vending machine. So consequently, when they do not do what we want them to do, we treat them like a broken vending machine. We want to rock them against the wall and kick the panels and have them give us what we want. The internet is filled with video, but do not go down this rabbit hole, by the way. Just lesson learned. But the internet is filled with videos of men and women throwing tantrums and tirades, all because other people stand in the way of them getting what they want, how they want it, when they want it. I mean, they're everywhere. If you want to go into a store, you know, right after they stop selling breakfast and start selling lunch, and they're no longer willing to sell you breakfast, that is the time to pitch a fit, because you cannot get your breakfast when you want it, how you want it. If you walk into a store and the owner says, "Hey, we're requiring all of our employees and customers to wear a mask," and you don't want to wear a mask, not because you have a health condition, you just don't like it, that's the time to pitch a fit, because you cannot go into the store you want to go into, how you want to go into the store, so it's just time to have a meltdown and record it. If you want to get mad because Burger King is reducing the size of their cups, and you're no longer getting the full 80 ounces of sugary beverage that you require, it's a great time to record it and pitch a fit. I mean, there are tirades and tantrums about everything that could go wrong. If you cannot get what you want, how you want it, when you want it, it's time to throw a fit. And whenever we feel ourselves sliding towards railing against another human being, whether it is a worker or a server or a business, we would do well to remember the example of this young girl's owners who led a city into a mob and beat and imprisoned the servants of God. Because this girl was just an object, they became so angry that they had Paul and Silas beaten and imprisoned, treating God's image bearers as objects is no way to make a living. Now, even as I stand here saying this, I know how bad I am at this. I could not stand before you with a straight face because my family has been in the car with me. It has not been that long since I have been sitting in a fast food line grumbling. It has not been very long at all since I sat down at the computer to write a scathing review on Yelp. I did not do it, but I really wanted to. It hasn't been that long. The worst, for me at least, was a communications company that shall remain nameless, but they have three initials and an and sign, and they were supposed to come and set up my internet and TV service, which they came through my neighborhood selling, door-to-door, knock-knock, hey, we're doing this service now, would you like this? I'm like, oh, this will fit my life perfectly. I've been looking to make a change because of the expenses. This will be great. So they were supposed to come by my house sometime between 8 and noon. 4-hour window. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I take the kids to school. I come back home and I wait. I've already disconnected my TV and my old TV and internet services. So I'm just reading and reading and reading and reading. Finally, sometime after 1, it's probably closer to 2, I decided to call and see what was going on. After several minutes on the phone, the lady at the other end told me that, in fact, a service technician had come by, had checked the box at the end of my street, and discovered that they could not provide me with the combination service they had sold me. And they weren't even set up to do what they were selling me they could do. And that in itself was really frustrating, that they were selling a product that they could not deliver. I mean, that's a problem, right? But the fact that after that, nobody called to tell me that. Like, I was just supposed to sit there and wait, I guess, until the cows came home. That just sent me over the edge. And I went into I'm not going to call it a rage, but it was for me, it was really close. So I vowed that as long as I lived, I would never use this service, and I would tell everybody this story so that they would never do the same. Then I moved to Manchester, and guess who became my internet service provider by default? All right? Brothers and sisters, no matter how frustrated we may get, how upset we may get, whether it's with our jobs or the jobs others are doing, we can never forget the difference between things and people. Whether people are working for us or we are working for them or they are providing our service, we can never treat people as things. Only one of those things is to ever be used. Only one of those things is ever to be loved. And we cannot confuse the difference. Because when we elevate things and making money, any of the baser economic parts of our world, when we elevate those to the level or even above people, we become nothing more than slave owners upset that our little girl's not turning a profit any longer. So this morning, if you have struggled with that and you would like to talk with our elders, meet with them after services this morning. We want to be conscious of all of our temptation towards this worst version of ourselves. And we want to pray with you and walk with you through that. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, please meet with us later. And now we're going to stand and sing.